let's talk about the CS50 family. So CS50 is many related parts that all come together as part of this broad CS50 family. So we have CS50 here at Harvard. We have CSI E50, which is our extension school variant. We have CS50X, which most people are familiar with, the free online implementation that we offer through edX. We have a CS50 certificate program, which is sort of an interesting hybrid of CSI E50 and C50X. And now we have CS50 AP, and CS50 AP is our brand new initiative to introduce computer science to as many high schools and as many students as possible and really get kids excited about computer science using this new AP Computer Science Principles curriculum to do that. How many of you folks, just a quick survey, have seen the Purple Book? This is what it's called, the Curriculum Framework Book. Okay, so a couple of you. We do have them in the back, and if you are curious to see what is in the curriculum framework, please let me know, and I'll be happy to give you one of those books so you can see exactly what the framework is all about. I have done a lot of work mapping CS50 to make sure that it meets all of the standards in the curriculum. There are a couple of modules that are being added to bring us up to make sure that students, when they encounter that AP exam, which will not be until 2016-17, as this is the last year of the Computer Science Principles pilot, that once that happens, they are ready to go and they have encountered all of the topics that the exam is expected to test. How does CS50 AP fit into this new family? I mean, here's this chart that's kind of intimidating. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff on it, but what's really important is this last column here. So CS50 AP is offered for AP credit, and presumably high school credit as well, starting in 2016. Exactly how it's going to play in your high schools this year, from what we've heard, some schools are offering it as advanced topics in computer science, some schools are offering it as introductory topics in computer science. But starting in 2016, when the official AP CSP curriculum rolls out, it should be available for AP credit, which means that students will hopefully be able to, if they perform well in the exam, apply it and use it towards college credits. Yes?
Quick one. Is it definitely going to replace, I'm a computer science teacher for 15 years, is it going to definitely replace the other one, do you guys know?
It is not going to replace the other one. It is designed as a precursor to A.
Or not.
It is communicated as a precursor to A. It is supposed to be the introductory level course, and we think that though CS50 is rigorous, which is a hallmark that we're very proud of, the course's rigor, we still think that it does qualify as an introductory course. It is an introductory course at Harvard, and we teach it in 12 weeks. I feel very confident that all of your students can learn it in 36 weeks, even though they're not hopefully staying up until 4 in the morning and working 25 hours a week on problem sets. And speaking of problem sets, they will be smaller. The goal for CS50 AP is to take, so for those of you who are familiar, problem set 1, for example, consists of Mario and Greedy, and problem set 2 consists of Caesar and Visionaire, and we'll talk a little bit more about those in the coming day. But for CS50 AP, we're sort of reorienting things around problems and not problem sets. And that way students can tackle things in slightly smaller portions, which might be better for their time schedule. A problem set at Harvard can take somewhere between 10 and 15 hours. A problem might take somewhere between 3 and 4, which I think is a reasonable amount of homework to expect over the course of a week, not of course over the course of a night, but over the course of a week if a student is not like me, who procrastinated all the time when I was in high school. Hopefully they'll be a little better than I was. But we think that these are very doable, and we're going to organize things around problems instead of problem sets. That allows for homework to be given more frequently. Instead of having 9 problem sets as we do in CS50, it could be anywhere between 20 and 25 or 30 problems that get developed and rolled out. And those first problems will be taking the problem sets we have now and breaking them apart. But there'll also be new problems that come into play as well, as we have to write new problems to accommodate the new modules we have to write as well. One that is coming to the top of my head is simulation. I'm working on writing a simulation problem set that, or simulation problem that can be integrated with the simulation module when that comes up later in the course. Instructor availability, that's why you're here, right? You want to bring CS50 AP to your classroom, and so you will be the point person for bringing CS50 to your classroom. But as that very grand slide showed earlier this morning, there is a staff of approximately 100 people here. And we're really trying to integrate CS50 AP with CS50X's very vibrant and rich online community. There are hundreds of thousands of people involved in that community, and we have many, many volunteers and moderators who have participated in our Reddit and our Facebook discussions and our Stack Exchange, who are at the ready, and they love helping people with CS50, and they can be a secondary support structure for you if your students are overwhelmed or you have so many students and you know your school is okay with students using these online resources. It's an excellent way to bootstrap you and give you extra support that is virtual support, but is still there and available to all teachers. Major events, the CS50 Fair, the Hackathon, Puzzle Day, these are things that that students who take the course love. They love feeling part of this culture element. We want to help you bring that to your classrooms as well. And so we're developing Puzzle Day in a Box, which would be a modified form of the puzzles that you played around with yesterday, and we'll reveal the solutions to later this evening, for those of you who are still curious and still pondering about what those are. But those are events that that kids really love, and why shouldn't they participate in them and have fun? And hopefully it will benefit not only the students in CS50 AP or in your classroom, but it also might be a way to get students in the school more generally or in the community more generally and say, oh, that's kind of interesting, I wonder what's going on there. And that might also help to draw in people that might otherwise not take a computer science class because they're afraid of what a computer science class is really all about. Students who take CS50 AP will have access to all of our content. We're not trying to hide anything. It's all on cs50.tv, cs50.wiki, and these are all resources that David's going to discuss in a little more detail very soon. And the schedule is structured. There is a recommended or a suggested, not even really recommended, a suggested syllabus, which you'll see on the CS50 wiki of how to spread things out over 36 weeks. But as Diane noted, sometimes your students might dictate that maybe we'll go down this path for a little bit. Maybe we'll see what's going on here. And might have to spend a little more time, and I think that's totally okay. There's definitely some flexibility built into the schedule for you to spend more time on a module if you need to, because every classroom is different. Yes?
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. It seems like sections is probably one of the more interesting things to try to implement in high school. Have you guys thought of what's your vision for what that looks like? I don't depend on each school, what's possible, but what do you guys, are you guys recommending doing something where there's a big whole class and then small group sections happening sometimes?
So the question was, how have we considered integrating sections into the CS50 AP curriculum? And that's something we're going to discuss very shortly with our adopt versus adapt model. But it is going to vary by classroom. But depending on which model you choose, and I'll go into a little more detail about what these are, one of those models favors recreating lectures, because that might be something that your students will derive more benefit from, is actually participating in, you know, turning on the lights or doing the peanut butter and jelly, like really hands-on. The other model focuses on sort of using the materials as a primary resource, where students might watch the lecture videos on their own, or maybe you spend one day in class just watching the lecture videos, and then use the other remaining time you have in class as more of a small group discussion and sort of transform it more into a section. We're not really pushing which way, because I think that in this room there are 40 different teachers who have 40 different experiences and 40 different classrooms. We don't want to try and force everybody into the same box. That's really not what the class is all about. We want to try and make it flexible. And so I think that depending on whether you choose the adopt model or the adapt model, you might find that your classroom time might be more devoted to that small group section, and that would then free you up to be the section leader, a roving section leader. So hopefully that's a taste of the answer, a more complete answer in a moment. All right, so I've given a lot of thought to what I think that CS50 AP is all about, and I think it boils down to really three things beyond just our accessibility, culture, and rigor, which is CS50 overall. What is CS50 AP specifically? First of all, I think it's a learning experience. It's not just about coding. I know that I've spoken to a few of you who've done a lot of research into the various computer science principles curricula. Some of them are very programming intensive, as we would consider ourselves one of the most programming intensive of the curricula that is trying to implement computer science principles. And there are others that are very programming light and do other things. And that's perfectly fine as long as all these courses are trying to implement the same framework. The approach, it varies by curriculum. But ours is definitely more of a coding intensive, but it's not just about coding. It's really about computational thinking, and it's really about problem solving at the end of the day. And we use coding as a means to introduce all these other topics, because coding is, of course, a useful skill to have, especially if you want to continue doing computer science courses down the road. And so by using coding in this way, we can introduce students to these concepts, such as algorithms, such as the internet, such as, you know, name anything you want about that comes up in a computer science course. But at the end of the day, it's not a coding course. And we hope that your students don't come out of it at the end of the day saying, I learned how to code, like that was a fun class, or I learned how to code in C. That's really not what the class is about. The class is about problem solving, learning how to tackle problems in a more efficient way, which you can go on and do in any number of disciplines, not just necessarily computer science. It's about pushing students to rise to meet high expectations. This is an AP course at the end of the day. It's still designed for students who want to push themselves in that way. But students, I think, will rise to meet challenges that sometimes we don't expect of them. So I hopefully you'll encourage your students to really try. And even though this is tough, don't give up. Keep pushing through it, because I guarantee you that they will be able to rise to meet these challenges. And that's what this course is about. It's about giving them a warm environment and a comfortable setting in which they can feel like, oh, you know, I can make a mistake. I can trip up a little bit, and that's okay. And it's not going to destroy my grade, and my life isn't over, and I'm not, you know, I'm never going to get into college anymore. Like, that's not what this class is about. It is a rigorous class, but it's a class that ultimately has a goal of student success. And student success can come from making mistakes and tripping up and not getting completely tossed aside. Yes?
Something that David said this morning, I think really pertains to that. You have to see where the student is at the beginning of class and see where they get to at the end. If that's communicated to them, then it's the growth that matters, not to get to, you know, 5 AP tests. I think they can rise to meet their expectations without the stress.
I think so too, and I think that's important. I think that's something that we've taken to heart very seriously, and CS50 is not necessarily setting a fixed bar, it's a relative bar, and as long as there's a base competency level that's met, which of course would this pace be having some fundamental grasp of what the curriculum, all the essential knowledge components of the curriculum are, I think that is really the only baseline we have, but some students might clear it a little, some students might clear it a lot. And I think that encouraging those students who clear it a lot to go forth and explore a little bit more on their own, I think that that's totally fine. And I see that in my own sections. I see students who, and I for full disclosure, I've always taught a section for those less comfortable. So of the students who come into the class, I've always taught those that fell into that category or placed themselves into that category. And even within that category, there's a lot of diversity. Some students will struggle and they'll keep pushing through. And some students will have a breakthrough and they'll suddenly find themselves on a fast track. And you got to let those kids run with it. And I think that having the flexibility to do that is really important. And that's why I think that in CS50, generally, the fact that we do a trajectory-based assessment at the end of the day as opposed to a fixed checkboxes assessment, I think that that's a lot of the reason that students feel comfortable to make mistakes and ultimately make fewer mistakes than they think they will and do significantly better than they think they will coming in. I mean, I think that that's going to really vary by. Do you want to comment a little bit about how the CS50 grading model is sort of implemented?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the way we happen to do grading is that we do assign scores to students' problem sets along a few axes, as you probably know, correctness, design, style, and then scope. We have a couple of exams that we call quizzes during the semester that also have a score, and they have weights, and I'll come back to this in a little bit as well. And then the final project has a score. So we admittedly have the luxury of waiting until the very end of the semester before we have to commit to some value. However, for freshmen, we do give mid-semester grades, at least to those students who are struggling, and we very consciously in the course start the course. It's a little on the harsher side. Not so harsh that kids are discouraged, but not so positive with fours and fives that they're not really pushing themselves. And so on a quarterly basis, my instinct would be to pick some value that you're comfortable with where there's still headroom for the students, even for the more comfortable students, so that there's something for them still to rise up to. But also perhaps in the second or third quarter, doing what we do too, which is I almost every year email our teaching staff and say, hey all, it's time for us to ratchet things up a notch and to sort of put downward pressure on the scores and really expect perfection if a student's to get a 5. And the second and third quarter might be an opportunity to do that as well. And we happen to do those PSET by PSET, but I could certainly imagine it doing it more in the aggregate every couple of months as well.
I don't want to detract from Doug's flow here, but
That last part is an interesting reality, perhaps, for some schools, if you do indeed mathematically have to combine the values. But I should make clear that when I say we're putting downward pressure, it's not, the delta is not nearly that much. It might be the equivalent of, you know, B plus to A minus to A. It's not C to B to A. No, I see what you're going with that. I think I'd have to noodle on it a little more or invite suggestions here from the crowd, since we very one of the design decisions behind CS50's fairly opaque grading system is so that students do not equate their current performance with an A, a B, a C, or a D. And in fact, it drives me nuts when students get a 3 out of 5 on a PSET, which by our own metric is good, but they then do the math and they think they got a 60%, which is therefore a fairly poor grade. And so I think I should noodle on a little more how you might commit a priori to a score and then have to hold yourself to it because of how the school works. But I would certainly not give a student a C or a B in this quarter one or quarter two just to give them that kind of headroom. I would shy away from an A and maybe stick with B range, A range, where you're comfortable that you can sort of round up to what you feel is appropriate at the end of the year.
That's an interesting thing for us to consider. And if you could, you know, definitely communicate that to me again to remind me to keep that in mind, because that is, I'm sure, a concern that is shared by many. Yes?
This was one of the major topics we had as well in regards to the grading. Grading the problem sets, but there's other aspects as well. What weight does the program results have in regards to the other pieces? So are we grading, are you giving an overall grade based on how well this student has programmed, or is it not weighted as much?
So these would be, I can field this now, these would be our four axes, correctness, design, style, scope, to which we typically assign a range of 3 or 5 possible values. And we'll go into this in great detail tomorrow when we actually do some hands-on grading. But the short answer is that we evaluate students on a few different axes, one of which takes into account how correct the code is, how well-designed the code is, how good the code looks, and how much of the piece set or problem a student has attempted. And then we combine those formulaically using a formula we'll talk about in more detail tomorrow. And it allows the teacher, essentially, and the teaching fellow in our case, to home in really on a fairly narrowly defined aspect of the student's submission.
And just to tack a teeny bit more onto that, I think that this year is slightly different because there is no AP exam at the end of the year, which means we don't necessarily have a target we're driving towards, which is a frustration for all of us. And I probably mentioned this to a few of you yesterday, that we hope to have more information about what the AP exam is going to look like in March. That's what we've heard. But until then, we're sort of navigating through what we think is the what's going to happen. We offer quizzes in our course, which are midterm examinations. And there's definitely room in the CS50 AP curriculum generally to integrate whatever sort of continuous testing you want as well. We're not prescribing necessarily that you... Our model is 50% assignments, 40% quizzes, 10% final project. However you want to weight things is up to you. If you want to include more weighting because you're going to have more regular testing, because that's something that your students derive benefit from, then I think that that's worth integrating. I saw your hand.
Is it difficult, especially with the simpler coding examples, to decide if kids are borrowing code or not?
I'll talk about this in a bit too. Sure, the early PSETs, absolutely. Later PSETs, it becomes technologically a lot more possible. A spoiler alert is that, I mean, we so quote unquote ad board about 3% of our 800 students every year, which means to refer them to the disciplinary committee. So it's a non-trivial number every semester, but it's generally based on the middle and the latter PSETs where we have enough data and comfort to conclude personally that yeah, a line was crossed here. And then we typically retrospectively look at the shorter ones, and then we realize, yep, that fits the pattern too, but we wouldn't indict based on the earliest PSETs typically.
Do you do like in-class coding because of that or no?
No, we use software to mitigate against this, and we use, more of a sense of honor and honesty that we then police administratively. It's a cost of doing business to some extent.
Course of thinking and whatever else, maybe machine or robot or a car, or
programs right, and then the test, which is similar to some of the programs, multiple choice, true or false, open-ended, you got them all wrong.
Right.
He said, so if you want, you know, this is, and I tell them before I test them that I'm going to do this, so they know it's no surprise. And I say, and if you know, if you say, oh, I'm afraid to test or whatever, then you'll come after school and I'll hand you some open-ended, and you'll do it right in front of me, and I'll stay here till 10 o'clock at night, so you can take all the time you want. All the students did. Or if they do cheat, and I you know, whatever, let's say she copied it, he copied it over him, I say, okay, it's 100, and I write on the test, I scratch on the 100, put 50, and I say, you know, see Tracy, he's at number 50, and say, and that's it, there you go. Now the one who's copying on who is not off. If there's three of them, everyone gets a 33. Now, I'm not going to report you. This is how we'll do it.
And we'll discuss also what detection tools that we use and to catch things on our side too. I think this is another one of those things that's going to vary by school on how you approach things. We actually also do our quizzes on paper right now. Not necessarily for that reason, but just because.
My question to you guys is, do you know if they're going to release a release the exam? They switched over from C++ to Java EP back in 2003, but they didn't do a release exam for a while.
All we know is that they're releasing questions, but I don't know if it's going to be a full slate of 74 in March. That's all we know. That's all anybody knows right now, except for College Board. So I do want to just keep progressing through, but if you have questions about this stuff, please feel free to put it on the post-it boards to ask us, because we want to hear everything you have to say about grading and teaching the class and programming and how to do all these things. We want to hear about them. I do want to get through this so we stick to our schedule a little bit. I think this class is a learning experience not just for students but for teachers. I've been doing this for 9 years. Every single year, I learn something new in this class. I have a student who writes a program in a way I've never seen before, and I'm like, wow, that's really clever. There is always something new to discover. You may have learned something new today in interacting with your students about Scratch that you hadn't seen before. And I think that that's going to make this, I mean, I've been doing this for 9 years. Like, I'm invigorated by this. I love coming back to this. And I think that over not too long of doing CS50 AP and seeing your kids excited about CS50, you will feel as invigorated by it as hopefully they are too. And hopefully that'll spiral and grow and really grow your program and make other students in the school who aren't taking CS50 AP now want to take it because they see the buzz and they see the excitement, they see the teachers excited, and they want to be part of it too. Lastly, this class is fun and social. We have CS50 Puzzle Day, very fun and social, lots of stuff going on. We have the hackathon, there's a lot of sleeping going on at the hackathon, a lot of soda going on at the hackathon, but a lot of coding, there's a lot of excitement, there's a lot of excited buzz, there's a lot of idea sharing, there's a lot of breakthroughs. It's always fun to watch some student have a breakthrough about something and they finally realize how they want to tackle this, and it's a great opportunity to do that. And then of course we have the CS50 Fair, where we invite everybody in the community. The invitation is open to Harvard at large, to students, to parents, to friends, to come and see what they've done and make it so that there is a huge contingent of people who are proud of them, who are proud of what they have accomplished, so they can be proud of what they have accomplished. And it really does, knowing that this is at the end of the year and knowing that they can produce a project that they're going to show off to their friends and family, it excites them. It gets them really, you know, they want to participate in this. They want to show it off. They want to have this cool project that people remember. And that's why we have these events, is to allow them to have that creative exploration and to give them that awesome reward at the end of the year, this big smile on everybody's faces. And we have thousands and thousands of photo booth shots and shots taken by our production team attesting to smiles all across the board. I saw you had a question here. What happens at the hackathon? So the hackathon starts at about 7 o'clock at night, so I'm sure this might not be the kind of thing that you might be able to do exactly to scale. It starts about 7 o'clock at night, and it's about a week before the final projects are due. Students come, and they're all working on different kinds of final projects, and it's really ultimately a space for them to sit down and code, and it's an all-night affair. It goes from 7 to 7 or 7 to 8. Knuckle down and do it. It ends up becoming a lot of social stuff. There's a lot of students who will, they'll just bounce, people will bounce ideas off of each other. It's a place for creative exploration, napping. Late, we serve pizza at 9, Chinese food at 1, and we, the survivors, we treat to breakfast at 5, if they can make it. But it's really just this, we're near the end. It's, there's all this excited energy about the final projects. Let's channel it into something really positive for everybody. And so that's really what it's about. It's giving them a place to, an isolated set-aside space with their peers to work on their projects and share ideas with each other.
It's this point of memorable moments. It's, for us, meant to be one of those, you know, relatively few things you remember from college doing with a lot of your classmates. And similarly, I think you could achieve that at the high school scale if it becomes a, sort of the place to be. And it's been adorable. I mean, even at the college level, I remember some of the first couple of years we did it. Harvard tends to have a lot of formal dances at the end of the year. And I still remember a guy and a girl coming in their tux and gown after the formal at like 1 a.m. to then sit down and work on their final projects together. So that's devotion, I thought.
It's a lot of fun. It really is a ton of fun.
These visuals, too, I think are a good opportunity to emphasize something that I did not deliberately embrace early on. It happened very organically. This taking of photos, honestly, and posting them on a physical bulletin board or electronically to the extent privacy constraints might allow, or encouraging your students to tag you and then you repost it in an Instagram account or anything like that, it's just so wonderfully helped raise the profile of computer science here on campus. And now, because we have this online international community, just raising awareness of what CS is and can be and helping connect students with people around the world, it's such an easy and, in retrospect, obvious thing to do, but it's a wonderful trove of memories, honestly, for us as well. So I can't emphasize enough just the simplicity of taking out your phone or your camera and doing something with those visuals with your classes.
Yeah, and having your students post their own pictures to our Facebook page or tagging a CS50 on Twitter, and just they'll get replies and they'll get thumbs up and they'll get people that have no idea who they are, just excited for them. And that's really cool to know that what you're doing in your corner of the world is kind of spreading out and you're touching people around the world, and it's kind of exciting.
Question over
here. Oh, we have a question? I'm sorry.
I got a question about the music. Am I counterintuitive? Oh. Like driving music while you're coding? I mean, what is that? I mean, because I'm come from a generation, I guess, where you worked in quiet or so you could concentrate, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, like, the hackathon was tons of fun when you all came to St. Louis. And it was just driving music. Now, I don't know how much work I got done, but other people seem to really get work done. And then, like, even today, like, you start off with music. I mean, can you really, like, code and think? And I'm just asking, with driving music?
I think it's to each his or her own.
Yeah, I think to each his own. In terms of what I do when I'm coding, I actually play the same song on repeat over and over and over because I need a beat that I enjoy, but I want to eventually not sing along with the song. And so I actually listen to the same song on repeat over and over, which is probably, I'm the only person in the room who does that.
No, I've done, and I'll overshare. I've been listening to Crashing Waves lately while coding.
Because my students like seem to need to be plugged into something.
Yeah, I mean, we do it for the cultural aspect, the excitement aspect. It's not something, we don't do it at office hours, for instance, on sort of the academically pure gatherings that we have on a nightly basis. The hackathon, for instance, is something special, and the first few minutes of lecture with Colton are meant to be something special and to kind of warm the audience up, if you will. And so that's the role it primarily serves. And then when it comes down to actually doing the work, it's very different. Even at our own hackathon, we have music playing in the hallways, but not in the individual classrooms that students hole up in.
But culturally, they seem to like really
Not uncommon, I would say.
Okay. Students who need it gravitate towards it. Students who don't will go to the fringes and away from the music. We also have lots of playlists cultivated, and we are happy to share them with you, too, if you want to play a playlist. Many of Colton's tracks are on YouTube, and you could play them to start out your own class if you wanted to. And we're always, you know, there's a lot of us on the team who have lots of Spotify playlists and whatnot of coding music, and I'm sure we could nudge them to share them, and if you want to play them in your class for your events, I'm sure that would be something your students might enjoy. I think there's a question over here, too. You do, and you will learn about it very shortly. The question was, is there a place for you to all talk to one another peer-to-peer? The answer is yes. We have are you familiar with CS50 Discuss? We've talked about it a little bit in lecture videos. You might be familiar. It's similar to Piazza, our own platform, and it is specifically for teachers to bounce ideas off of one another, and we'll give you the links and information for that a little later today. So yes, there does exist a place.
Okay.
for that. So we were talking about the what I think are the three core components of CS50AP. So it was learning experience, it's an opportunity. This is a chance for students to explore personal interests while learning skills and gaining college credit. At this point now, I believe this is accurate, more of our students are taking CS50 as an elective than actually take it as, or it's very close to the line. So we have students who are majoring in the history of art and architecture, taking computer science class, do an amazing final project on art and architecture, which is something they're super passionate about, but they've done it in a computer science class, and then they're excited about this. And we are now, you know, we have this cool website, or we have this cool database of all this amazing art and architecture. Or, you know, that's a very simple example. We have students who go forth and make mobile apps for all this crazy stuff. But they're, at the end of the day, especially if you gear things toward that final project, which is still part of the CS50 AP experience, it's still supposed to be that end goal that students are driving towards besides the AP exam, they really do get to explore what they're passionate about. And I think that having that freedom to do that gets them really excited about it. I think that having this final project and being able to explore your own personal passion is one of the reasons that the courses continue to grow, is because students don't feel like they're going to get put into a box of you have to do this, and then you have to do this, and then you have to do this. It's, well, you have to do these few things at the beginning to learn the skills, and then you can go forward and do exactly whatever you want. And I think that that's something that students will find really valuable. They can take a computer science course and then go forward and major in computer science or major in whatever else they decide to go into for college or vocational school or whatever it is they want to do, and have this kernel of information that's really vital to have. It's an opportunity not just for students, but for teachers to contribute to a community of educators. So that gets to the question that was just asked. Is there a community of educators? Yes, and we have a wiki set up as well, where if you have a cool lesson plan and you want to share it, you can post it on the wiki, and then your fellow teachers can use it and comment on it and say, oh, you know, I thought this was cool. Here's a, what if you tried doing this? And it facilitates this discussion of, we have a set of lesson plans, we have a set of ideas to bring to your classroom, but we don't know everything. You all have life experience and teaching experience and classroom experience, planning lessons and knowing what will connect with your students. And if you want to share that, you can share that and become part of this broader community of developing this amazing CS50 AP content that can then go on and be remixed and shared and continue to grow. It's an opportunity for school administrators to break down barriers. We've seen so much of that this year. It's been really eye-opening to us that, you know, we started this initiative in late spring with the very ambitious goal of getting it into classrooms this fall. And there are 40 of you here, and there were 40 of you in Redmond, and there are more that weren't able to attend but still want to do it just because they want to do it. Bringing it into their classrooms this year, notwithstanding the fact that sometimes these things need to be approved, or there needs to be this process, or it needs to go, no, there was so much excitement about it that it just wanted to happen. And hopefully this can be a conduit through which more engaging and exciting courses, or more out there courses, per se, or whatever you want to call them, might be able to get into your high schools. We hope that this is something that starts a flow of things where maybe there's a little less red tape to have to get through every time you want to do something, or you want to bring something cool and have it be part of your school. So hopefully this will help with that. And it's also an opportunity for your community. So these events that we were talking about, the fair, the hackathon, the puzzle day, they are for the CS50 students, but we always extend invitations to the community at large. And I think it's really valuable, and we spoke to somebody extensively at the boot camp in Redmond about how he brought this up to his school board. And the school board got so excited that they decided that they wanted to bring it to every grade in the district. They're gonna start at the eighth grade, and they're gonna move one level up and change things a little bit going down, change things a little bit going up. And it got into the papers, and the papers were all excited about it. And now there's this kind of percolating tech industry in the middle of Pennsylvania because this city is so excited about bringing computer science education. They saw this class and they thought this is an opportunity for us to stop doing what we're doing now and really seize the moment and take advantage of this awesome tech excitement. So it's not just for the kids, hopefully, although the kids are obviously a very important part of this, but hopefully it also helps to inspire your community in whatever way it may do that. Ben?
Thank you. How do you guys in what way do you guys reach out to the community?
For here at Harvard? Well, we post to all of our social media accounts. There's postering that goes on. There's announcements that go over house email lists. So we hit really everything that we can. There's paper stuff. We have quirky videos that'll go up, and we'll just post them to our YouTube account. But social media is definitely one of the most important. But even something as simple as an email will result in invitations, or reaching out to, you know, if you want to reach out to your community, emailing your town hall, or maybe getting something posted in your town hall. If you're speaking specifically of, you know, we are operating here at Harvard, but if you're operating in a school district, in a public school district, or something like that, putting word out at your town hall, or maybe submitting a press release, right? Like, it's not that hard to get something put in the paper, and that might be just an exciting way. It's simple things, really. It's just connecting to people where they are, whether it's Facebook, whether it's newspapers, whether it's in the town hall. Again, this is one of those, there's no exact answer to the question, but it's sort of, you know, gauge your community and go where your community is, and you can hit them, you know, where they are.
We had a great example of that in the Bronx. People are interested in making this pipeline to tech industry, or we call it a tunnel because we've got to dig it ourselves. Mm-hmm. But part of that is just making a meetup. We have this thing on the web called Meetup where you get together with everybody who's interested in the same thing. Somebody brought a keg from Bronx Brewery, and it just went from there.
That might not work in a high school.
Very much appreciated.
Might not work in high school.
you know, you make a lot of connections very quickly in this environment.
And lastly, I think that CS50 AP is really a community at the end of the day. We here at CS50, we've been doing this for a long time. We have pedagogical experience. We've had successes. We've had some failures that we'd like to forget. But we, it's true. I've certainly had them in my own sections too. But we have experimented with this curriculum. And we feel confident that taking it forward, it is an introductory class. We have done it, and we feel very confident that you can do it too. And you have us as support when you need us. To make sure that this gets implemented successfully. The Microsoft team, Nacho and Bjorn and many other folks at Microsoft are providing bandwidth and infrastructure support, and Nacho, I'm sure, would be very happy to talk to you individually about what that support might look like. But there are really a lot of opportunities for you to come up with some really creative stuff that you want to bring to your classroom, and I bet you Nacho and Bjorn have a way to can come up with some ideas that might help you bring it to life. And they have that amazing support structure in place to do that. And that's why we're really excited that they're working with us on this initiative. The pilot teachers, that's you. You guys provide crucial support and feedback from the front lines. We are not bringing this into the high school classrooms. We are bringing this into the Harvard classrooms. You are bringing this into the high school classrooms. So you can tell us what works, what definitely does not work. How can we change it? How can we fix it? It's that feedback that's going to allow this curriculum to become developed and more rich. And then next year it gets better, and next year it gets better because of this feedback. This is not a fire. Right now this session probably does feel like a fire hose of a lot of information being thrown at you, but I don't want it to be that. I want this to be a communication. You all have my email address. Feel free to use it as extensively as you want, and I will try to answer things as quickly as I can. But I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you every day. If you want to email me every day and tell me how things are going, I want to know, because it allows us to fix things and make things better for future students. And lastly, students can join and contribute to the vibrant CS50X community. As I mentioned before, we have these amazing online resources that have developed through our CS50X flavor of CS50 in particular, that we have this amazing, you know, group of volunteers who are there at the ready to help if you are feeling overwhelmed in the classroom and there's just too many questions. Stack Exchange can help you. The volunteers at Stack Exchange can help you. The volunteers at Reddit can help you. The volunteers at Facebook, which has been very interesting to see that our Facebook community is, you'll see if you ever go to the CS50 page and open up some of the comments, there's groups of people just kind of form in the comments of, oh, I'm working on problem set one. Oh, so am I. And then they find one another and go off and form a study group, and that's okay. And you know, it's making students feel like they are part of a community, and that's really important to us. We don't want the CS50 AP students to feel like they're taking CS50 AP and everybody else is taking CS50. That's not what this is about. At the end of the day, we want them to have, this is CS, I took CS50 shirts. they are taking CS50. They're just taking a slightly different version of it because they have 36 weeks in the most, and in most cases in high school and college we have 12 or 13. But we do want them to feel like they're part of that community. But all of us are working to make this class better and to improve CS education more broadly, which I think we can all agree is something that needs to be, have more attention focused on it in classrooms all around the country. So these two models I hinted at, and I'm gonna try and pick things up a little bit. So we have two models that we have called Adopt and Adapt. What are these two models all about? So the Adopt model is the model where the teachers are using CS50 materials as a primary resource. So their students may be watching these videos as homework assignments, or they may be just pressing play on the videos in the classroom 1 or 1.5 days a week, and then the remaining time is used for small group, breakout, office hours, kind of debugging stuff. So this is the first of the two models. These teachers, and you'll hear from one of them very soon, they will add post-lecture discussions about the material, so after the students have watched the material, whether it's in class or as homework, there'll be some time devoted to talking about the material and having students ask questions and bounce ideas off of one another. And they may supplement these materials with recitation sections, as I mentioned, which is the smaller group things. And in this model, the teacher serves in a facilitator role. This basically allows for more flexibility in helping students one-on-one, which I'm sure is something that's very challenging to do. But we hope that if you choose this model and outsource some of the lecturing to us and our resources, it frees you up to actually have that one-on-one or one-on-two time, which is probably extremely rare and very difficult to come by. But by pushing some of the teaching to us and letting us do some of the work for you, or at least help you get some of that work done, you can be that on-the-ground person that the student really needs at that time, and hopefully not feel too overwhelmed when you do it. So that is one of the two models that we are recommending, and we're not really, and some people will, I think we had somebody who said they were going to adopt APT, because ADAPT is the other model. Some teachers will adopt, some will adapt, some will do a mix of both, some will do something completely different. So don't feel like you're constrained to doing one of these two things. If you have an idea and you want to take it out of the box a little bit, take it out of the box a little bit. Tell us about it. Tell us how it works. We want to know, because it might be the best idea we've ever heard. And I certainly don't want that to get passed over because we said you have to adopt or adapt. So the ADAPT model. So that was the ADAPT model. So the ADAPT model. These are teachers who are using CS50 as a secondary resource. These are the teachers who are watching the lecture videos, or they're watching lecture videos on their own as class prep, and then the next day they're coming in and they're ripping phone books in half, and they're having their students jam knives into peanut butter and jelly, because they're in these classrooms. The students get more. They derive more value out of being actively involved in these demonstrations as opposed to just seeing them. There is certainly a lot to be said for even just seeing the lights go on and off versus 0000001, but maybe your students actually want to come up and start flicking the lights and having some fun, and that might help them grasp the material better. So that might be something that would be considered more of an ADAPT model, is recreating the materials in the classroom. Excuse me. In this model, the teacher serves a more active role, sort of doing what David does, is being lectures and being the personality at the front of the class who is, you know, keeping things really going. And in this model, you may rely more on the online CS50X community to do some of that small group debugging help with you. We really do have a lot of volunteers who are really, really good, and they won't be like, here's the answer, because that wouldn't really do anything for anybody. These are people we've seen who are, you know, think about this, or they'll ask leading questions, or, you know, we're on there too, so you probably run into one of us on there too. But that's really what this model is more about. It's more hands-on as opposed to, or hands-on large group as opposed to hands-on small group.
I just got to clarify that. You're saying if we're adapting in our classroom in live time, we have online mentors to give us support? Yes?
I'm saying the CS50X community that is available to students is very vibrant and rich, and that you could rely on that as some sort of supplement.
So during class, my kids can do a chat with some of your guys?
With, it might not necessarily be us exactly, it might be the CS50X volunteers that we have.
Yeah.
If that's a model that you want to approach in your classroom, yes, that's something that is an option that is open, I think, is using our Stack Exchange, using our Reddit, using our Twitter feeds. If that's something that your students would derive value from, I don't think that's something that should be shied away from. Okay. So here are some questions to think about. Probably not going to have an answer for them now. It's probably something you need to think about a little bit. When you came to this boot camp today, were you expecting or were you thinking in your head, am I going to be pressing play on these things? Am I going to be recreating these things? I'd like to hear from you in feedback forms and whatnot about what you were thinking coming in and whether or not you might want to take things in a different approach, having heard a little bit about what these models offer and what some of the different pros and cons are of each. The pros of the adopt model being you get a little more hands-on small group time. The pros of the adapt model being you get this very excited buzz in the classroom from all these lecture demos. There's definitely a balance, and maybe you can do a hybrid of both and get the best of both worlds. That would be great. We want to know what we can do to support your choice. What extra resources can we generate in the coming year to make it easier to adopt or adapt as you see it in your classroom? What makes you feel uncomfortable about the prospect of teaching CS50? I'm sure that, you know, my first year teaching it, it was scary. I took the class the year before David started teaching it. So when I started teaching it, everything was completely different. So my first year teaching it was very similar to your first year teaching it will be, is that it's brand new to me, and it's brand new to you. And it's okay to be uncomfortable about things. I want to hear about it. I want to know what I can do to ease that discomfort, or what we can do to make things a little easier for you moving forward so that you do feel more comfortable in the classroom and that your students can then hopefully do a little bit better. But yeah, please let us know. The sticky notes are available, and we'll get more paper if we run out of space. There's emails, the discussion forum that David's going to mention shortly. But for now, I want to introduce Sadi from Miami-Dade College, who has taken CS50's curriculum and brought it to life in his school. And he's going to tell you a little bit about the model that he chose and how things have played out.
Double check some settings so we get it all. Good. Okay, this is it. Let me give you volume. When you play the video, you might not hear volume for the first second because of the room, but it should be okay. Oh, yeah.
Hello, everybody. My name is Sari Kulthum. I'm an engineering professor in Miami-Dade College and learn how to code with CS50X Miami, something that we're doing in the IDES Center, where it's the entrepreneurship and innovation hub of Miami-Dade College. So we chose CS50 to be the course for anybody who's interested in computer science, whether they're programmed before or never programmed before, are curious to learn about computer science. And I believe that CS50 was kind of the perfect course for that, because it's very appealing for most of our students. And it's also not like a very introductory level in a sense of just teach you a little bit. It takes you really to a very good level where if you want to major in computer science or if you want to start working as interning as a developer, you can have an opportunity that too. So let me talk about some challenges that we have in Miami. We're Miami-Dade College, we're not Yale, we're not Harvard, we don't have the same students. We don't have that filter in the beginning, so we have some challenges. So we decided that we do not want to dumb CS50 down for our students. So the alternative is to provide more support to CS50. So basically what we do is that CS50, we take it as it is from edX, CS50X, and we'll provide a local support in Miami. So the challenges in Miami, for example, to start with, demographics, where the case is the majority is the minority in South Florida. So again, we need to provide more support, and there are a few things that help us succeed in this. I'm gonna start with CS50 structure. It's an amazing structure, starting with or delivering the information in more than one way. So starting with lectures, and here I'm gonna talk about how do I do lectures as well. We take our students to Harvard virtually by playing David's lecture for the first hour. And then for the second hour, I start my class by asking students, what questions do you have about David's lecture? I survey the questions. I take almost all the questions that I can. And then I give them examples based to answer these questions. So I make sure that they do not leave that classroom without answering their questions or most of their questions in class. But also, you know, sometimes David is fast, sometimes. so we have walkthroughs. Walkthroughs are available in edX, and they talk about the same examples that were mentioned in lectures. And some students will prefer that, to go back to these examples slowly on their own pace, pause, rewind, and watch these again. So I ask all of my students, you know, go back, watch the walkthroughs. And it's not all the information are on the lectures. There are more details for some students who have more, like, you know, want to know a little bit more about what's happening in the lectures. There's always shorts. And I always also encourage my student to watch the shorts, because again, there are some same information, but there's also more in-depth information in shorts as well. And one more thing that we recreated in Miami-Dade College with the sections. So we're using the same outlines or slides from Harvard, but we have teaching fellows that recreate this live for our students in smaller groups. For example, lectures, this is our second round. Our first round started in March, and we had 80 students. This round, I have 150 students. So in sections, we can cut that like a big number into smaller numbers and have more in like one-on-one experience or a discussion going on with 20 students. And we also have, after that, coding hours where you can assist personal students one-on-one for like another 2 hours. And one more thing I want to mention, those PSATs, you know, it takes you some time to read what is required, right? But that's part of the recipe. You know, there are videos there that gives you all the tools that you need, put it all in front of you, and then give you that difficult or challenging problem set. So that's very beautiful. If you just, you know, go ahead and tell the student, oh, the problem set is to do, for example, cipher, and you give them an algorithm, they don't know where to start. They have many questions. In the PSAT, they have like warm-up videos, small examples about things that they've seen before. They prepare them just right before they start, so they kind of know where to start. So this is really, if you see as the CS50 structure, the information is delivered, or different kind of information, I would say, delivered in different ways. And that's really important. And that's really, you know, gets to different kind of students, students who are more comfortable, students who are less comfortable, many kind of students. And something very important, engagement. So this is a tough class. You gotta keep your students interested in it. And trust me, our students love CS50. It's challenging, but they still love it. So how? Culture of CS50. They are CS50 proud. CS50 make them very special. They've never had a course like CS50 before. Why? Because first of all, the lectures and the demos are so engaging. Oh, I can't say the word anymore. Peanut butter and jelly. Peanut butter and jelly examples, floppy disk examples. There are a lot of examples that demos from David, if you can use them in classroom. I would not skip on these. Even though they see them in the lecture, I would still do them with them, and they still enjoy it. We printed out elephants recently, just like you guys did. And why? Because students requested that. Like, we're recreating what David is doing. Sometimes you would think, you know, oh, but they just see it, they just saw it, why would I do it again? When you do it again, you get everybody happy. Everybody want to go out. Everybody want to do it. It's so engaging. Events. I don't know, have you been to a class before where you had a DJ? All right, that's something that the students will talk about. The students will be so happy about. And when you do that, you can actually get away with giving them information or a little bit more intensive course than other courses that they see. So there has a lot of fun in it. And this creates the culture of CS50. I will be talking a little bit more about individual events in a little bit. And social media. So social media is helpful in two different ways. First of all, to encourage everybody who is scared of computer science or to try computer science to look at this beautiful, like, course, fun course, which is CS50. And it's a Harvard course, so it's not like, oh, I'm taking something that's, you know, I don't know who made this course. It's a very, like, world-class education, and it's affordable to us to take it. So it's something that, you know, you see it on your friends posting about it, Instagram and Facebook. You're curious. You want to know what's happening. So social media is really helpful. And something else I want to follow up with a gentleman over there about, if you have a question, what are you going to do? You can post it on Facebook, wait for somebody, you know, to answer. But you can also use, for example, Slack, which is an app that has, like, instant messaging. And we had, like, students in Miami love Slack. Why? Because sometimes they're coding something in the middle of the night, 3 a.m., and they need somebody to answer. And they have a question, and somebody from Australia is doing CS50, and they can chat with them instantly. So it was really, so the social media was, beside all the support that we give in Miami-Dade College, still is a big role, like peer teaching and a group of, you know, discussing ideas. And that's also one of the, something special about the puzzle day that we'll talk about in a bit. Harvard support. I mean, I would say our own experience. You know, at the beginning, we thought, oh, Miami-Dade College, Miami, Harvard, you're here, they're there. And then again, like you would feel, I know they're busy, I'm not going to ask them this silly thing, you know. Don't do that. Go ahead and ask them. You will be surprised with their support. Like you just heard, ask me anything, email me anything. This is the truth. This is the truth. You know, we anything that we get stuck with, we need any help or advice, they're always there for us. So this is, take advantage of that. This is great, and you can see that, you know, you have the wiki, you have the discuss, you have a lot of tools that they provided for us. I'm gonna show you some videos from Miami. This is gonna be Puzzle Day. We'll be right back. that was our first puzzle day. We were inspired what puzzle day looked like in Harvard. We got some music going on. We got some puzzles that gets students to work in groups, break the ice. And the one feedback, the most common feedback we get from students at the end of CS50, we wish we met each other or work in group since day one. So this is something very important, and that's so important in puzzle day, getting students together and so we break the ice. And this is our hackathon. So Harvard were very generous. They came down to us for our hackathon. They helped us out. It was amazing. And prepare yourself because you're going to be famous. When you're teaching CS50, you become famous. And not only you as a teacher, I'm famous now, I feel. And then your students as well. And that's something that if you guys want to you can see that on CS50 main Facebook page. Our students are getting internships and full-time jobs after finishing CS50 because what CS50 has created. And some media attention as well.
Students taking the test.
Talk about a treat for students. Some South Florida college students are getting a little taste of the Ivy League. A Harvard professor is bringing his most popular computer science course to Miami-Dade College. In this Education on 6 special report, Ari Adger shows us how it's helping them get a head start on a brand new career.
It's Friday night in Miami, but this isn't the latest hot club. It's an all-night programming cram session called the CS50 Hackathon at the Miami-Dade College Idea Center.
And tonight is all about focusing on you and your work and the projects you've accomplished thus far this semester.
That's Harvard's David Malin at Miami-Dade College, the same rock star professor who teaches CS50, one of the most popular classes at Harvard.
We can now literally tear this problem in half. It's getting easier and easier.
When you think Miami-Dade College here in Miami, you don't think of Harvard in the same breath. What draws you here?
So this is entirely attributable to our friends at LaunchCode and at Miami-Dade College, who adopted CS50's curriculum as a vehicle via which they've been getting students from 0 to 60, so to speak.
Malin is so popular, students take pictures with a puppet that looks like him. Really? Most of the students in the class have no prior coding expertise.
It's funny because I come from a background that has nothing to do with computers. And when I took this course, I fell in love with it so fast.
At the end of the semester, even though most students who take CS50, both in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and here in Miami, have no prior programming experience, the goal of the course is to get them to a finish line at which they are empowered to actually build their own software for any number of platforms.
You might think of this class as speed dating, but at the end, instead of getting a date, you get a job in computer programming.
And we can get them actually employed as working computer professionals.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. It blew our mind. When we first started placing people that had done nothing but take the CS50 curriculum, it was amazing.
Jim McKelvey says he started the nonprofit LaunchCode.org to fill the nation's tech talent gap. And Malin's CS50 is the perfect vehicle to take these students to programming careers.
It's going to be an amazing opportunity, and I'm very ecstatic about it.
Which we've had people take just this class and go from Trader Joe's Joe's stock boy to working at an advertising firm as a programmer.
Starting next month, anyone can take CS50 online through launchcode.org. You don't need perfect SATs to get this taste of Harvard. In Miami, Ari Adzer, NBC 6, South Florida.
That's the metric. They take pictures of a puppet.
That is so funny.
I'll be around today and tomorrow. If you have any questions, please let me know. And my name is Sari Kotham. This was CS50X Miami. Thank you.
All right. Thank you to Sari and Doug. And up last, before we take a break, and then we greet Jason for a mini section, is meant to be all the more of a crash course on CS50 explained and to particularly give you a sense of the resources that shall be available to you. Please interject, as always, with any questions. This is... I'm on laptop. I'm on PC. There we go. Oh. Nope. Should I stop touching things too at the same time? Okay. Miss. It's okay. That's what I was doing back here. So this is CS50 Explained, and this is admittedly about to be a fire hose of information, but rest assured that all of these links and slides will be available online. So much of this is already on cs50.wiki, and you can email and call Doug at any hour as well if any of this is too fast. So in terms of what awaits you in the way of tools, and realize this is more of a menu than it is any kind of prescription for what you need to, and it's resources that we've built up for ourselves over time that are increasingly available to students and now teachers. So for grading tools, and we'll talk much more about this hands-on tomorrow, Check 50, as many of you know, is our command line tool via which students can get automated feedback. Over time, not by September, but over the next several months, are we rolling out new and improved versions of this, particularly to help students with fairly esoteric compiler error messages, like undefined symbol, or unknown reference or the like, and you might be thinking of some error message you yourself have seen. What we're doing is we're in the process of wrapping Clang's, the software, the compiler, so to speak, to convert some of those messages deterministically to messages that are much more familiar to those less comfortable. It'll be a feature they can turn off so that they can actually see the more arcane and ultimately long-term more useful information, but realize there'll be a lot more of these tools, especially for those less comfortable. Render 50 is an existing tool in the appliance that you can use to convert a student's source code into a PDF. So that you can then use Acrobat or Preview or Bluebeam or any number of tools to annotate it by making little sticky note comments, if that would be a helpful part of a grading workflow. Review 50 doesn't exist yet, but it's literally what I was writing with some ocean music the other day. It'll be a web-based tool via which you can do exactly that same workflow, but by doing it in a browser without needing a PDF, without needing to email out a PDF and so forth. That'll probably be a few weeks or a couple months out, but it's in the pipeline to improve the PDF-based approach. And Style 50, many of you know, is meant to provide students with some feedback as to the quality of their style, at least with respect to our arbitrary but consistent imposition of a style for some students. Acrobat, Bluebeam, these are commercial or free versions of software that you can use. Google Documents and Google Spreadsheets, more from Doug on this over time via the wiki and online. But these have long been part of our own grading workflow. We, for instance, distribute grading guidelines from me to the teaching fellows via shared Google Documents, which is very easy. We use Google Spreadsheets and the like for little metrics so that they can fill in blanks for raw scores. And we'll generally provide you over time with helpful formulas because we realize that many of you have systems that you already use or you have to use. And so we're not going to impose top-down any kind of grading software or workflow, but rather give you some tools that you can integrate into whatever works best for you based on our own experience as well. Learning, of course, the CS50 appliance we've been using for quite a few years, but of course it's not ideal for everyone because it's fairly heavyweight, requires a decent amount of hard disk space and RAM, as well as CPU cycles. Some students, some teachers don't have administrative access over computers, so it's not an easy proposition to get the IT folks to actually install something you need. So we're working toward this summer and debuting this fall something called CS50 IDE with a startup based in the Netherlands, a company called Cloud9 with whom we've gotten very friendly, and they have very kindly been helping
helping us adapt their existing interface to CS50 so that it will be an environment almost identical to the CS50 appliance. It will not be a sort of stripped down web-based text editor only. It will have an embedded terminal window. Students, for those familiar, will have access to their own shell account. They'll have sudo privileges, which means they can execute and install anything they want on it. So it will essentially be a web-based version of the CS50 appliance without sacrificing any of the underlying fairly arcane but lifelong useful tools that we currently leverage in the appliance.
Will that be available in September?
With very, very high probability. We are currently planning to use it for ourselves and our 800 students on campus, and I say high probability just so we don't trip over some non-trivial problem with the system. So we have readied CS50 Appliance 2015. All of the documentation is already online. It's functionally equivalent to the version 2014 you've probably been using, and that's essentially our plan B, so that even if we fail here on campus, we can very quickly shift gears.
So my biggest thing coming here would be the infrastructure. Like, how do I set up each kid's laptop? What do I need to tell my IT department? Like, what do we need to get this thing rolling? Do you recommend that we use the CS50 appliance?
Ideally, no, because it's just going to be more work. However, you'll see later tonight, after dinner time, Dan Armendariz is going to give us all a crash course on what CS50 IDE is and how it works. And at the moment, we beta tested it this summer with a small scale version of some of our summer classes. Everything is working wonderfully well. It's just we have not beta tested this with thousands of users yet, so I'm a little intrepid about saying, yes, go this direction. So we'll follow up over email on the wiki with some bulleted steps as to what's best to do. We already have all the documentation for the appliance. We can tell you today, tomorrow, exactly what the IT folks should be asked of them. Perhaps if you ready your own plan B so that it's there even if you don't use it this fall, but we will simultaneously have this web-based version as well that can be used on any computer with an internet connection. So we're going to try to hedge our bets during this pilot for both.
Okay, so but you'd rather we use one of those two as opposed to try and implement this completely on our own?
Absolutely. I mean, the reason the appliance exists is because it is a pain in the neck to support dozens, if not hundreds or thousands, of different human beings' computers. We've done it before, and it's way more trouble than it's worth. You're welcome to do it, but the appliance existed so that we sort of bear that burden and then amortize the cost over everyone else.
So just correct me if I'm wrong. So every kid, when they log on, like in my class, for example, they'd have that John Harvard prompt and
exactly.
Just work it like that?
Yep. Exactly. And so long as they have internet access, then it will just work.
Yep. Cool.
So that is the future. It's just we're not quite sure when the future is here. It should be this month.
Okay.
They would edX, they'll have an edX account. They'll sign up for an edX account still so they can log into CS50 IDE. We're going to use the edX login so that we don't have yet another login for people to deal with. The edX site will have curricular assets available to you. However, Doug, in the form of the wiki, are going to provide direct links to everything as well. So for all intents and purposes, you don't ever have to use edX.org. However, we're going to borrow their account system so that students will minimally, if they use the IDE, sign up for an edX account, and then use it to log into CS50's IDE. And IDE is Integrated Development Environment, just web-based text editor and compiler setup. And we'll see more of this evening, right after dinner.
Now, in terms of implementation, students are going to have to submit projects. How do you propose that they submit the projects in our own classroom? So do they do it the same way?
We're going to propose a few different workflows. Either one, they can use existing systems of ours. Two, you can use Dropbox, which works wonderfully well on a fairly small scale. Folks have certainly used email as well, or any existing system if you have Canvas or some LMS that allows for Dropbox uploads. We, for instance, have students just zip up their PSET1 folder, for instance, and then upload it to us so that we can actually download, manipulate it, PDF it if we want as well. So there, too, we're not going to impose a workflow, but offer a menu of options that will initially be limited, but over time will grow and grow.
Okay, thanks.
Question in the back.
Just imagining, and this might be a problem that needs to happen later, but I'm just imagining my students submitting their work to me, submitting their work on edX.org, and then getting two different scores and having, you know, that conversation. Is there any way that we can coordinate to see, hey, is this student account submitting to you, submitting to me, and that way we don't run into the issue of the student saying, hey, mm-hmm.
Short answer right now, no. And in fact, that's one of the projects for this coming year during the pilot to try to automate some of those processes. What Asadi's been doing, for instance, is he has his students submit to the edX interface, and then here the teaching fellows will look at the grade report that CS50 grade board has produced. It was actually from Asadi that we got the inspiration of trying to figure out a way that a student could just share his or her data with their local instructor. We're not there yet, but that's the trajectory that we're on. So during the pilot, it will be a little more organic as we figure out what's working best for everyone, but that's on the radar for sure. And so in terms of other tools, manual.cs50.net is documentation, where the CS50 appliances documentation lives that you might have seen. Reference.cs50.net is a tool that adapts the so-called man pages in a Linux environment, which if you've read some of them, are ridiculously arcane. They also mention certain data types, like size underscore t, instead of just calling it an int for the size of something. And so what Davin and other members of our staff have done is they essentially scraped all of the Linux man pages, and they're available at reference.cs50.net, but a student can click a little button at the top of the page that says less comfortable mode and change all of the English prose into something much more accessible with more human-friendly simplifications and examples. So realize that's a tool for students and you as well. As Doug mentioned earlier, CS50 Discuss for teachers lives here, and you'll be able to access this. Just reach out to Doug if you don't yet have access. And study.cs50.net is what we have historically used in recent years for our own teaching fellows leading their sections. We provide them with a skeleton of a lesson plan, sample slides, sample examples, and this resource is available not only to our students, to our teaching fellows, but also to you and to your students, and it too is a tool there for you to adopt or adapt, and indeed many of our teaching fellows download our PowerPoint slide templates and then add or remove based on their sense of their class and what kind of examples they want to work in.
Just to go back a second, is grading automated? Or is it there's actual human looking at each one of these projects?
Correctness is automatically graded, and you, the teacher, could do that by just running check 50 in the certain syntax of the command prompt and actually seeing the student's results. Two, you could expect them to somehow deliver that information to you via some web-based form system that you might use or already have. Or three, you can take the approach that Saadi has used initially, where they just submit to edX, and then they show their teaching fellow or their teacher the essentially printout or PDF or over the shoulder of their grade book.
He couldn't actually access their grades. They would have to bring it to him.
At the moment. And so that's exactly the trajectory that we're on to try to make that linkage. Right now, it was a very homegrown effort, and we've realized the value of that.
And that grading is done automated, like all
correctness
computer?
Testing. Yes. So right now, when you run check 50, your code or your student's code is uploaded to CS50 servers, where we put it through a battery of tests that we have written. And by test I mean we try Mario's pyramid with an input of 0 and -1 and 23 and 2, just to see if the student's behavior matches our specifications. And if so, we return a bunch of ones or a bunch of zeros, depending on the passing of those tests.
So the other three grading elements that you had talked about before, those are done by a human.
Human, correct. And it's up to each teacher.
Does edX do that?
No.
No,
so we only grade the edX students on the axis of scope, how much of a problem set did they try or at least submit portions to, and how correct is their code. We offer no feedback or scores on design or style.
And that's all automated?
That's all automated.
Okay.
Style is coming because we can do that deterministically. We simply need to improve the quality of the tool. Design, we could try but do poorly because of the various machine learning and AI that would be requisite to do that well, and we're just not nearly at that point.
Gotcha.
So design is very deliberately meant to be done by our human team here in Miami, elsewhere, to actually provide students with qualitative and not just quantitative feedback. To Doug's comment earlier about the various communities that have arisen, here too we'll link these online, but it's truly been remarkable. In the Facebook group alone, there are some 64,000 people from around the world, and this too we think is an exciting opportunity at the high school level if and where these kinds of tools are allowed, either on campus or at least at home or on cell phones. A student here in the U.S. or abroad can connect with a student literally halfway around the world, and thanks to time zones, there's almost always someone taking CS50 awake at any moment in time. And it's been fascinating, honestly, from the staff's perspective to see and to try to cultivate these communities and interconnect people in a way that, frankly, has probably never been possible before technologically among AP classes. And we're really looking forward to seeing what develops here and embracing any other tools that you all propose or people develop. And these are just some of the most popular ones, Slack being a synchronous chat service and some of these being familiar as well. We realize that in high schools and various school systems, there's certainly issues with firewalling and proxies and so forth. And one of the questions we'll ask you in a debriefing form is, what is blocked, if you know, at your school, and what might we be able to do to facilitate unblocking things? How might we proxy these tools? So we'll need that feedback so that we, as harvard.edu, can try to circumvent some of those firewall issues for pedagogically compelling reasons. And in terms of resources, these two are innumerable, and you've interacted perhaps with quite a few of these on your own, and indeed, even within CS50 on campus is the suite of tools not meant to be consumed in its entirety by all students. It's really meant to cater to students' disparate learning styles so that some students learn best by coming to lectures or not at all, or watching them online, or reading the canonical notes, or reading the transcripts, or doing none of those, or engaging more in sections, coming to office hours one night a week or four nights a week. And so it really is to each his and her own. And so this is just a sampling of the various curricular resources that exist. And part of the process over this coming year, I think, will be for you all to decide for yourselves, what is it that's useful to you? What do you want to adapt or adopt or jettison altogether and infuse with your own ideas? And that's exactly why we stood up this first version of the website for AP as a wiki, so that the teachers involved can say, hey, this is a great way. I teach binary search, totally different from what CS50 does, but let's see if we can't stand up something similar. And I just thought I'd tease you with something that one of our undergrads, Michael G, who was here earlier, has been working on. We have just two of these now, but one of our goals is to provide teachers with teaching assets or learning objects, or call them whatever you want. Widgets is what I would call them. Just little tools that you can either embed in your own homework assignments or pull up on a projector in class or have students visit on their lab or computer screens. And so what Michael's been working on, for instance, is our own version of binary bulbs. You might recall this from week zero. We didn't bring them today. We brought the old school desk lamps because they're easier to carry. But we have these wonderfully amazing, colorful API-based light bulbs. But we also implemented this, thanks to Michael, in software. So this is just a tool that first and foremost allows for students to tinker. So if I turn this light bulb on, it tells me in decimal what the equivalent is. And we can sort of play back and forth in this way. We can also just increment up and down and sort of visually reinforce the what we were doing for fun earlier with the flashlights and the light bulbs themselves. You can also turn on game mode, and I can input a number between 100 and 255. And we did this in week zero when we had some students come up on stage. I could type in the number 50. Click OK, and now I'm asked, how do you represent the number 50 in binary? And I can start to kind of click around, and then when I finally get it, I get a little fabulous prize. And so our vision for this, and they are meant to automatically rescale. For those familiar with HTML, they're meant to be iframeable so that you can put it into your own website, so that really they're just a commodity that you can use and integrate into your own lesson plan or your own instruction. A second one of these is what we call indoors, so 15 doors that lend themselves to binary search or even linear search to do digitally what I used to do by literally taping pieces of paper to the wall. We're sort of past that now, and now we can do this in software a little more elegantly and in a way that kids can play at home if they so choose. So I'm being asked here, find the number 50 in 15 steps, and that's because I've configured by default the efficiency. I need to do this in big O of N, so this is around the time we talk about asymptotic notation, and I could try just linear search, looking for 50, and you can see that it is in fact sorted because I left this switch on, so I can sort it or let it do it randomly, and there it is, the number 50 was found. Or if I change efficiency to O of log n, I can then click new game and now find 50 in just 4 steps, and now you can have a student come to the front of the room or do this as an at-home learning exercise and kind of do some binary search here until I finally find the number 50 as well in just enough step. So we're hoping to create opportunities for memorable moments so that teachers don't have to find or buy or recruit some physical objects when we can facilitate such in software. So big thanks to one of our undergrads for that.
One thing that we've found a lot of success with is taking widgets like that and having them be projects that students do in the course.
Absolutely.
Do you guys have any examples of that stuff?
Not so much of learning tools, to be honest, and this is probably for lack of encouraging it explicitly. So many of our students tend to do web-based projects that are less academically themed and I think a little more website themed and so forth. But this is the kind of stuff we would love for folks to link back to on the wiki if you can find some place to host it, or we can help host it for you and your students with attribution so that their work lives on well after they move on from high school. Indeed. And then, and of course, and these are resources with which you're probably familiar that do live in different places. Realize it's been very deliberate that we put our assets on CS50's own website, like CS50.tv and edX.org and YouTube and iTunes and Roku and bunches of other places. It's almost always the same materials, but just accessible via different tools and in different ways. CS50.wiki is meant to be the go-to place that will help you outlink to other places. So don't feel overwhelmed by the sheer number of possible destinations. Walkthroughs generally led by Zamyla, who tuned in earlier via that video, CS50 shorts, which are more canonically focused on individual topics, sections, of course, which we've started filming. Thanks to Dan and the production team, we film all 60 of our sections here on campus for pedagogical feedback on campus, but also as a resource for students online. Office hours, of course, is something we host locally. And an answer in more detail to a question earlier, I might imagine in this adopt versus adapt model, a teacher at a high school with 10 or 15 or 30 or 50 students generally doing some kind of amalgam on a weekly basis of a little bit of lecture, but a lot of section style material, but a lot of office styles material, but not necessarily regimented by day, but based on the pulse of the class and what needs to get done and really picking and choosing what kind of pedagogical model might work best. Seminars, if unfamiliar, as you may be at this point in the term, are optional classes that our teaching staff and alumni and industry guests tend to lead toward the end of the semester on things like using Node.js, a JavaScript-based programming environment, or Ruby on Rails, or Python, or any number of other tools or environments that might be very germane to students' final projects, weren't necessarily part of the core curriculum, but are meant to help students bootstrap themselves. And indeed, what's so amazing at the fair on campus every year is just how many projects are focused on material that I am absolutely certain I did not teach, let alone CS50 itself, and it's truly remarkable just how much students bootstrap themselves with just pointing them at the right resources, as we tried to do.
And this is probably because it's break time, but you could say afterwards how, like, a kid might want to go over and above what they possibly know. Oh, I wanted to do this, this, and this, and you know they're going to have to know Ruby, PHP, C++, this, and then you, how do you, or if you don't know, because they don't know, and I don't know.
It's a good question. What we tend to do on campus for a situation like that is, because we group our students with teaching fellows who tend to have a little more technical experience, if not a lot more than they, part of our final project assignment is an approval process, whereby that teaching fellow needs to weigh in on whether it's realistic, unrealistic, but very often the TF has never been familiar with the student's material. iOS projects, Android projects, a lot of our TFs have never done mobile application development, so we have the luxury, of course, of having multiple people, so we can kind of shuffle the students and have different advisors, and at individual school level, easier said than done. But to my point earlier about the online community, is very often posted on the Facebook group and on the subreddit that we have are questions like, hey, oh, I'd really like to make my own blog from scratch. You know, what tools do I need? And just soliciting that community feedback, not only from our tools, but stackoverflow.com and other destinations on the web. I would absolutely encourage students to reach out. And this is what's key too. It can be very daunting for our own teaching fellows, most of whom are undergraduates themselves, that my God, my student wants to do an amazing sounding project that I'm completely incapable of helping him or her with, and that's totally fine. And we do disclaim to students, you might be a little bit on your own, but that in and of itself is one of the goals of the course, to take the training wheels off and allow them to, you know, dive into the deep end and see how well they can emerge. And our role then is more of advisory than instructive at that point. Problem sets, with which you're mostly familiar. Yes?
Thank you. When you say office hours or sections sort of in a high school setting, mm-hmm. would you say, like, give them a problem or, like, not quite a problem set, but a problem and then have them work on it in class while you go around? Is that the kind of thing you had
exactly
in mind?
And not necessarily an additional problem. I dare say the problem sets as they exist now, and as Doug is compartmentalizing them to be more bite-sized, are more than enough work for a typical person to generally bite off. And so when I think back to my own days, I taught high school math for a while, and I would say too that I didn't sort of label what I was doing in any elegant way, but I was kind of lecturing sometimes, and occasionally I would wander around and we would work on various problems, and so those were what we here call office hours, but in high school it's just called teaching and wandering around and helping students. And you know, we sort of bucketize these various pedagogical models, but in reality there's an organic mix that I think just comes very intuitively to anyone. So yes, that's exactly what I mean then by office hours. Problem sets, I'll refer to the online resources and your own experience therein, but realize that we will provide you with the various specifications and all of the tools and all of the English prose with which you can assign these assignments, and also point you potentially at other such opportunities for review as well.
I got the impression that you're planning to revise these or somewhat streamline them for an AP version?
Explode them a bit. So as Doug said, whereas PSET 1 right now has Mario and Greedy and some other pros in it, the goal is to not make them as macro as they currently are, but to make them a little more micro so that you can focus for a week or a week and a half or a day, whatever is appropriate, on just Greedy and not have to arbitrarily tell your students, okay, everyone go to this HTML page, but stop reading here and start reading here, which is just messy and unduly confusing.
Is there a time frame for that being available? Or?
Oh, soon. And Doug's working on that right now. And this is one of the things we'll follow up with shortly after this week. On
right this second.
Thank you. Yeah.
We'll post Doug's cell phone number up a little later as well. Walkthroughs and postmortems. Walkthroughs, again, from Zamyla. Postmortems from a fellow named Rob. And postmortems are the opposite of walkthroughs that are meant to be a resource for you, too, so that if you want to show your students how else they might have implemented some homework challenge, you can certainly show them your own code if you're comfortable doing so. Or you can show them Rob's, wherein he walks students through a possible solution or two to a problem set after a student has actually submitted it. In terms of the final project, for us, it's structured as pre-proposal, proposal, status report, implementation. But this, too, I would dare say, is pretty intuitive. If you want to just, these are milestones meant to help keep students on track. Pre-proposal, for us at least, is an email to one's teaching fellow saying, hey, I'm just thinking of implementing this. What do you think? And it's our initial opportunity in late October, early November to say, that's great, or that sounds like PSET 4, you're just rehashing it, or that sounds like way too much, let's recalibrate. So it's meant to get them thinking early. Proposal is a more formal process, and this is where we get them to commit to, if I have a good outcome, it's going to do this. If I have a great, if I have a better outcome, it's going to do that. If I have a best outcome, it's going to do this. And to help with a conversation over email or in person, calibrate students' expectations for themselves so that minimally every student ideally achieves their good outcome with a bit of stretch goals as well. Status report is, in our case, email us a week before it's due to make sure you've actually started the project. It's sort of a way of helping you help yourself. And then actually submitting the implementation. And just a final few words on some mechanics of the syllabus that we're happy to talk about in more detail, especially tomorrow with grading. But let's give you just a taste of things. This is our syllabus. Our academic honesty policy is fairly long and robust over the years as we've realized certain issues we should address in writing. But it really does boil down to this heuristic. At the end of the day, it's be reasonable. And many of us might have an intuitive understanding of that. But we in our op policy also have a series of bullets where we characterize reasonable acts and a series of bullets where we characterize unreasonable acts. And in essence, it boils down to this. If a student is struggling with his or her code, it is reasonable to show your code to a classmate so long as your classmate's solution is not to show you his or her code. They can look at your screen. They can propose, oh, you're missing a semicolon here. Oh, maybe you. This looks like an infinite loop. And that's perfectly fine and a wonderful resource to embrace among peers. But if the classmate's solution is, oh, here, just look at how I did it, that we would deem unreasonable. We'll certainly leave it to you to decide for yourselves where those lines are. Along these lines, tools you might want to avail yourselves of, eTector from Princeton, Moss from Stanford. These are online tools via which you can run a command and essentially upload your students' code, all of your Mario.c files, to their servers. They will do a statistical analysis on it, return to you some web pages that you can just click, click, click around, and it will show you a ranking of pairwise comparisons of all submissions. So it's an O of n squared algorithm where they compare all submissions against each other. And then they say, these look worrisomely similar. These don't look similar at all. And it is not a rule of thumb now. It's now time for human eyes to say, well, this just happened by chance, or the computer's just getting confused here. And it's a first pass effort to help you not have to mentally compare every PSET against every other PSET. And certainly ingredients you can use if you would like. And certainly there's the intuition when you realize that some student has gone from far to a starting point to some delta the next week. Very often, honestly, even in our case, we Google a few keywords, a misspelled variable, a misspelled comment, and invariably we find the GitHub repo and then have an intervention of some sort.
So when you upload, when you upload code to these, do they then save the code to then compare them to future codes?
They do not. So they delete it after 7 days or 30 days. So all they do is compare pairwise code that you give to them.
So it's not
a turn it in global process. It's localized to what you submit to them.
So if you turn it in 32 and then you run the 32, it compares the 32 amongst themselves and with outside resources?
Not against outside resources. So what we do, for instance, is when we, for better or for worse, discover some online solution, a GitHub repository, or we, since we have 8-9 years of history now, we'll upload 8 years worth of data because we have it, but we also just download GitHub repos when we know there's a Mario.c problem that's very easy to find, and we'll just upload that so that we can compare a student submission against a known asset. So all of it's fairly automated. It's a very sad, painful process, and we do it honestly to try to keep the course as pure as possible and to set expectations for the majority of students who are not crossing the line that at least they're not being put at a disadvantage.
As a high school unit, just, I mean, as a high
high school unit. I know how pressed for time you guys are. We have 5 classes. I have 150 kids, National Honor Society, parents, life, everything, life, life, life. So we don't necessarily have all that. What you can do sometimes, too, is sometimes on my test or something, I'll give them some problems or similar problems, again, open-ended or whatever. That's exactly what they coded. So why can't you do it now? Do you know what I mean? So that's sometimes, once when you trip them up a little, not trip them up, but, you know, kind of let them know in the beginning, like, we know what we're going, where we're going and what's going on here. Usually that type of student will raise above. And if they don't raise above or if they're having problems, that's because they're struggling usually. It's not because they don't necessarily want to do it, especially your elective. They're struggling somehow, and that's an identification to you. Like, I need to, you could sit with, hey, you know what, Tracy, I noticed that, you know, this didn't really work well. Maybe you, and don't accuse them. Maybe you got it with the computer, you guys. I know you guys work together. I know you guys work together, but I see sometimes you have a little bit of trouble working yourself or whatnot. Why don't we take a look at this? So if you approach it like that, usually it helps them along.
How we do grades is here. We'll talk more about grading workflow tomorrow. So this is just a sneak preview of how we tend to weight things. And worthy of note here is that we deliberately weight problem sets quite a bit because it's where students will spend a super majority of their time. We deliberately weight the final project fairly low, but a double digit so that it feels substantive. And indeed, it can make the difference between A minus, B, C plus, B minus, and so forth. But it's low enough that it's reasonable to compare apples and oranges really at the end of the day, because some students have made a mobile app. Some students have made a website. Some students have made a C-based program. And it's really hard to compare objectively those kinds of tools. And so we don't want to overweight the contribution of the final project to the grade, lest we do them a disservice there. The course does recommend books. I have not looked at many of these books in some time. And indeed, the course, it has a fire hose of other resources that we rely on officially. So the course requires no expenditure on students' part for software or hardware, makes no expectations of operating system. It supports any. So realize that it should be accessible so long as students have access to a computer, of course, with ideally internet in some form at school or at home. And then the events, more to come from Doug on Puzzle Day in a Box and Hackathon in a Box and Fair in a Box, really sets of instructions and resources and actual puzzles and solutions and so forth, so you don't have to reinvent wheels that we've been trying to build up here in Cambridge if you'd like to do something as well locally. And we'll do our best to throw some stress balls and the like into the box for you as well.